The only thing I'm guilty of is struggling for my people.
Leonard's case shows how far the government will go to suppress an activist who is standing in their way of something they want.
Leonard, as a man, is not really what things are about anymore, because it's about our people. He represents our people now.
The purpose of repression is to repress struggle. And they have Leonard in prison to repress a struggle. And if we allow that tactic to work, then the government and the corporations win.
We got to remember that who the enemy is. We're always fighting each other all the time, and it's time we stopped doing that and got together and put all the groups in this country together to put a stop to some of the things that are happening. And we can't do that if we don't do it together.
The people that did these things to Leonard and to the Lakota people on Pine Ridge and to the First Nations all over the country are the same people that are trying to cut welfare programs. They're the same ones that are trying to break unions. They're the same ones that are polluting places like Love Canal and things like that. This is the same group of people up there that are getting rich off the suffering of everybody.
But it's important that we talk to people and tell them what's going on and who Leonard Peltier is, because they don't know. They don't know what any of the struggles are. So it's our job to get out there and open our voice up and say something. Because if you don't stand up today, what's going to happen tomorrow?
Leonard Peltier of the Anishinaabe and Lakota Nations is a longtime Native activist and a member of the American Indian Movement. He has spent over 35 years as a political prisoner.
Tonight on Circle A Radio, we talk about the International Day in Solidarity with Leonard Peltier, coming up this Saturday, February 4th. Our guests are Michael Winrode and Arthur Miller, both regional organizers for the Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee. Stay tuned.
I'm Arthur Miller. I've been a solidarity worker since the 1960s. I've been working on Leonard's case now with the new year here. 34 years. I used to be the co-coordinator of the Northwest Leonard Peltier Support Network for about 10 years, and now I'm the Northwest organizer for the Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee.
I'm Michael Winrode. My heritage, I come from Sisseton Wahpeton, and I have Choctaw blood and Danish also. I'm also been made a regional coordinator also now. And I said, oh yeah, thanks for telling me. Arthur and I have been doing a lot of stuff for years together, and so he can, you know, usually if I put something together, I'll give him a call, or he puts something together, or he gives me a call. We also do a lot of things in the community, you know. That keeps me pretty busy.
Great.
So now that I'm not working anymore, I'm going to be having a lot more time on my hands. So
we are going to need to give our listeners background, and I wondered, Arthur, if you'd like to give folks a background of what has been going on, what happened, why has Leonard Peltier been a political prisoner all these years, and then maybe Michael Winrode, you can jump in if you hear things you'd like to add.
What it goes back to is when the United States started signing treaties with First Nations, they did so because they couldn't fight all the tribes at the same time, so they came up with this idea of signing treaties, and then they forced Native folks onto reservations, which at that time they thought was worthless land. Nobody else wanted the land, so that's where they would put the First Nation people. Well, later on, because of particularly energy development and whatnot, minerals, oil, gas, uranium, and whatnot was found on these lands that they thought was worthless. So they had to figure out how to get these lands away from the native people to make their maximized profits. Their first scheme was to declare the First Nations guardians, the United States as guardians of the First Nations, and because they said that native people could not look after their own affairs. Well, this allowed them to steal more land, lease it out to energy companies that paid little or no royalties, and when that finally is exposed completely, that'll be the biggest financial scandal in the history of this country. And after the Wounded Knee Massacre, the years after that, there are many government policies against Native people, but the majority of the American people had no idea what was going on. There was this myth that Native people stopped to exist 100 years ago or so, that nothing was going on. Well, then in the 1960s, organizations started to come out to deal with Native issues and struggles like the fishing struggles and whatnot came about, and then the American Indian Movement came into existence. What AIM was really good at was putting a public spotlight on different issues like broken treaties and whatnot. When they were asked to come on to the Pine Ridge Reservation, they didn't know at the time what was actually happening, but the U.S. government had found high-grade uranium in the northwest corner of Pine Ridge, and they wanted to get that from the Lakotas. Well, they knew that the Lakotas, the traditional people, would not sell the land because they still would not take money for the Black Hills, which was stolen from them, but they refused money for it. They demanded that that land be returned. So they hatched a plan to suppress the traditional people, and then AIM was asked to come on when that started happening, and that led to the Wounded Knee occupation in 1973. Well, that put a huge international spotlight on Pine Ridge and Native issues, and this was very threatening to the government and the corporations, because if people realized that it was happening in Wounded Knee, they would start looking at other Native lands across the country, which the same basic things were happening, like Big Mountain with coal and on and on. So after Wounded Knee, they had over 500 indictments of AIM members. They did everything that they could to suppress AIM in the courts. And on Pine Ridge, for 2.5 years after Wounded Knee, they had a period of time which is referred to as the Reign of Terror, in which over 60 traditional and AIM people were murdered, towns were shot up, many people were wounded, people were driven off the road, and everything else like that. Well, Dick Wilson, a corrupt tribal chairman, went to Washington, D.C. to illegally sign over that section of the Pine Ridge Reservation. At that same time is when the firefight at Ogallala happened. It was instigated, and we know that because all the roads going into that area were blocked. The local hospitals were notified to expect casualties. They did not want another Wounded Knee where there was a standoff. They wanted to go in there, have a firefight, suppress AIM and the opposition, the people that would put a spotlight on the illegal signing away of more land. And so they used an excuse of this young Indian boy supposedly stealing a pair of used cowboy boots to move in. Well, the two FBI agents supposedly after this kid were not normal FBI agents. They were counterintelligence agents and members of the FBI SWAT team. They followed a vehicle, red pickup truck, onto the compound where AIM had a encampment, because the elders asked AIM to come back to Pine Ridge to help defend. defend them, and they pulled up into a defensive position, got out of their cars with their guns, and a firefight occurred. The people at the encampment thought that this was another drive-by shooting, which had been occurring continuously on Pine Ridge. The FBI apparently didn't care if their agents were in danger or not. They sort of sacrificed them. And two agents were killed in the firefight. One Indian AIM member was killed. But most of the people at the AIM encampment were from the Northwest. They were members of Northwest AIM. The first trial after the death of the two agents, the AIM members, Bob Robidoux and Dino Butler, were found not guilty for reason of self-defense. Then they put all their efforts at getting Leonard Peltier. First, they extradited him back from Canada by giving the Canadian courts false information, lying affidavits that was proved later.
I wasn't going to try to cut in on you there, but that was Myrtle Poorbear.
Right. And she signed three affidavits. Then after she got away from the FBI, she had been intimidated from the FBI. They threatened to take her kids and all kinds of stuff. And she then went to the defense, Leonard's defense, and asked if she could testify for Leonard that this is what happened. She had never been at the encampment. She didn't even know Leonard, but they just found one person from Pine Ridge to testify that she had seen Leonard shoot at the agents. And the court refused to allow her to testify, saying that if she was to be believed, that would shock the conscience of the court. Well, obviously, so they refused to allow her to testify. They moved the trial from Cedar Rapids, the original trial, to Fargo. Nobody knows how this happened, and it was an illegal motion. You don't take a trial away from a judge and give it to another judge without formal reasons and whatnot. This was never found out. The second judge had a very anti-Native bias, and he ruled against the defense on any evidence presented by the defense that what had occurred was a matter of self-defense. So Leonard was convicted and sentenced to two consecutive life terms. After that, we went through a series of appeals, and each time it was turned down, including when we found from the Freedom of Information Act that the ballistics report, one of the main pieces of evidence at Leonard's trial, had been fabricated. Then when the appeals court finally got that, they said, well, yes, this is true, but the standard by which we have to rule is that would the jury have for sure found Leonard not guilty if they had this information, or would they might have found him? If they might have found, they couldn't give him a new trial. They had to know for sure. Well, for sure is an impossible standard. It's not a standard regularly applied. For example, at the same time, there was an SNL scandal where this one corporate guy was given a new trial because in his trial, the government had mentioned that he had been convicted of a different crime, and that tainted the jury. Well, false information, intimidated witnesses and whatnot, that doesn't taint the jury. All the witnesses against Leonard, one was killed, and he didn't officially recant his testimony, but the others did, include Norman Brown, who in the movie Incident in Atogawa states that he was intimidated by the FBI to lie at Leonard's trial. And even though we proved all these things, and the courts have come out and said that the government has done all these things, And the prosecutor, Lynn Crooks, that's really his name, came out and said that the government does not know what role Leonard may have played in the firefight on that day. We cannot get him a new trial because the laws of this land and the Constitution do not apply to Leonard Peltier. You want to add something there, Mike?
I think you pretty much covered it all, really. Good job. Because usually people forget about my biggest thing that I like to remind people is the uranium mining, because that's something that in most of the movies, even nobody even talks about it. But that's pretty much what started everything.
That aspect has been really underplayed. I haven't heard it described as in depth, and that was really interesting for me listening to what you had to say, but also reading the information that the Leonard Peltier Offense Defense Committee has been putting out. Can you both talk a little bit about the origin of the committee? When did it start, and what has been the ongoing activities of the committee?
The committee started in Vancouver, B.C., fighting the extradition of Leonard, and it was started by the Butlers and Steve Robidoux and
Kelly White,
yeah, and a number of other people. Let's see, it moved to Los Angeles, then moved to Rapid City, then moved to Seattle, then moved to St. Louis, then Kansas City, then New Mexico, and now it's in Fargo, North Dakota. The difficult thing with this is, since the case is so long, it's really difficult to find people that can put their life on hold and really have nothing to live on for a long period of time. So I actually had it for a while in Kansas City, and I have never been critical of the defense committee because I was in that position when it was in Kansas City, and it's very difficult to continue it.
You are listening to an interview with Arthur Miller and Michael Winrode of the Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee, here on Circle A Radio at KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
The biggest thing that I like to talk about is Leonard as a man is not really what things are about anymore, because it's about our people, you know, because he represents our people now, you know. And so we got to remember that who the enemy is, because we're always fighting each other all the time. And it's time we stopped doing that and got together and put all the groups in this country together, you know, work with everybody to put a stop to some of the things that are happening. And we can't do that if we don't do it together. That's the most important thing that I can think of to even say, besides the responsibility we have as adults to bring our children up right, so that they can know, and we're going to teach them everything they need to know about these things so they can take over for us and keep these things going. That's why we've had things in an oral tradition like we have all these years. That's why we still have it. Because when you write it down and you try to figure it out like that way, then it leaves things open for interpretation of any way, you know, you can kind of, well, it says this, it's got to be this way. But it's not like that, you know. We just need to stop worrying about the stupid stuff and get together and remember what's going on out here. And so, of course, we got to let Leonard know that, you know, it's important to Leonard. See, those things are very important to him, especially our children, you know. And that's what one of the things that we don't talk about, too, is that he puts a lot of effort out there. People don't know that, you know. He puts a lot of effort out there to help a lot of different communities, a lot of children's organizations and stuff like that. And that needs to be known too. But we have to bring our children up like that, you know. And that's one of the most important things that we can do, because they are our future.
That's true. The unity issue is very important. Now, that's a problem in any organizations, but we got to even go further than that, in my view, and what I've been trying to do over the years, is to get everybody out there to understand why Leonard's case should be so important to them. I don't care if you're a union activist or an environmentalist or whatever it is that you're struggling for. Leonard is directly connected to it because the people that did these things to Leonard and to the Lakota people on Pine Ridge and to the First Nations all over the country are the same people that are trying to cut welfare programs. They're the same ones that are trying to break unions. They're the same ones that are polluting places like Love Canal and things like that. This is the same group of people up there that are getting rich off the suffering of everybody. And we should first support Leonard because of who he is. He's somebody that stood strong for 36 years. I support Leonard, because of that. He is, like Michael said, he's done incredible things for all kinds of people. Back in when Mumia Abu-Jamal they put a death sentence on him, he asked his supporters to stop working on his case and fight that death sentence. He has been there for the children of Pine Ridge every Christmas, raising, trying to get Christmas gifts for them, trying to get clothes for them, trying to get fuel for the elders there. He has been there for people. But Leonard has also been a social activist who has been involved, strongly involved, obviously, in First Nation issues, but also in issues across the board. I remember during WTO him issuing a very strong statement in support of the WTO protesters and whatnot. He's an activist. And Leonard's case shows how far the government will go to suppress an activist who is standing in their way of something they want. So we need to support that, and we have to realize that we're doing that not just for Leonard, but we're doing that for all of us, including ourselves.
That was my point, exactly.
Yeah, and we need to support Leonard because the resistance and struggle of the First Nations for over 500 years didn't end 100 years ago. The whole thing has been continuous ever since. In the period of time when they were invisible, there were the boarding schools, the termination programs, the forced sterilization of Native women, and more theft of land. It's been a continuously a policy of genocide and whatnot, genocide and assimilation. And all these issues together, we need to realize, though there are differences between our issues and the diversity of humanity, but they all come together in the type of world we wish to create, which is something based on freedom and the well-being of people and the land. And for that reason, everybody that believes in these things, the occupied movement, everybody realizes that we're talking about basically the same group of people sitting up there in their corporate boardrooms doing this to all of us. Mm-hmm. And we need to at some point come together. That's the reason why on all the stuff we put out in the Northwest, the headline reads a quote from Sitting Bull as individual fingers we can easily be broken, but all together we make a mighty fist. And that's what we're saying with Leonard. We need to come together and free Leonard, because none of these things are possible that we're talking about as long as we leave Leonard in a prison cell.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you a little background of the Northwest. Since 1992, the Northwest has worked together as a region to put on marches and rallies for Leonard, from Portland, Olympia, Tacoma, Seattle, Everett, Mount Vernon, Bellingham, and at the U.S.-Canadian border. And since that time, we have done 63 marches. This is the most important march we've ever done because it involves the clemency campaign. We've done 16 marches in Tacoma. One reason why we do regional marches a lot of times here is because, as Michael pointed out, there's the Puyallup Nation right here, and they give us a whole lot of support. The Puyallup Tribal News did us a good write-up. So on February 4th at 12 noon, the march starts at Portland Avenue Park, which is on Portland Avenue between East 35th and East Fairbanks. Take Portland Avenue, exit off I-5, and head east. There are caravans, or carpools, however you want to say it, coming from Portland, Olympia, and Seattle, and I think Everett also. Not only are people coming together as areas to travel together, but it is quite a sight seeing these caravans at times, you know, this long line of cars with Free Peltier signs in their windows moving up the highway. So that alone gives more publicity for Leonard. We did one caravan one time, one year, going to the border where we had 26 cars, and that was an incredible sight. So there's the Portland caravan that Michael spoke of. This is very important. There's rides for everybody in Portland that wants to come. Portland is just as responsible and important in this event as every other group. Matter of fact, they've probably done more than most other groups have. And there are the other caravans. The Occupied Movement in Olympia, Tacoma, and Seattle have officially endorsed the march at their general assemblies. I don't know about Portland, and this will be part of an international day in Canada. It's happening in Vancouver and Toronto, in Germany, in Hamburg and Berlin, in Brussels, Belgium, in Ireland, in Durban, in England also, and all across the United States. This is people coming out together in support of Leonard and pushing clemency. Clemency is a very important issue right now because it is the main possibility of Leonard being freed, since they won't give him a new trial. And we believe if we can create enough public pressure on President Obama, that there's a good chance that he would grant clemency. When we did this before with President Clinton, we believe that we came very close to getting clemency, and then the FBI kicked in and started to organize. They pressured newspapers to write editorials against it, and they even had a 500-agent protest in front of the White House against clemency. And unfortunately, Clinton went out of office not ruling in favor or against clemency. This time, we need public support. So if anybody has supported Leonard in the past, this is time to come out and do it again. If anybody has ever thought about supporting Leonard Peltier, this is the moment in time to please come out. We need a strong support in public as possible, and this will be a really great day. We have a lot of incredible speakers. Michael's going to be speaking there. His mother, Dorothy Ackerman, will be speaking. We have a drum group from Portland coming. We have a coastal drum group. We have a number of Puyallup speakers. We have a college professor. person speaking on decolonialization and whatnot. It'll be a great rally, and we will be there no matter what the weather is. We've only had bad weather really once when it rained hard on us, and we were all going to drive to the rally site, and a Puyallup elder said to us, "We are meant to do this." And she started walking, so we got in behind her and followed her there in pouring rain. So ever since,
yeah, I remember that.
We will do this. The march is maybe a little long compared to what other marches are, but the Puyallups wanted it to start in their community, and that was Portland Avenue Park is the park in their community, so that's the reason why we start there. It's all flat, so there are no hills. We have a march permit, which we had to fight hard to get the right to march in the city of Tacoma. We had to sue them in federal court and won, so we don't have any problems. We have a good security team there looking out for any problems that could happen.
Oh, plus the Warrior Society is going to be helping with that too. Portland AIM Warrior Society.
You are tuned into Circle A Radio at 90.7 FM in Portland. The regional march in solidarity with Leonard Peltier will take place in Tacoma, Washington, this Saturday, February 4th. If you need a ride, or if you have a car and you can offer a ride, gather across the street from KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland at 9 a.m. to leave for the march and rally. Please get in touch with the Oregon Jericho Movement if you'll be joining the Portland Caravan by email oregon.jericho, J-E-R-I-C-H-O, @gmail.com, or call 503-750-0523.
It's the only thing I got left in life. Right now I'm just living, being stored near as a piece of meat, to be put it literally, and for me to, and I got my dignity, my self-respect, and I'm gonna carry that with me. Even if I die here, that's just my fate.
You are listening to an interview with Arthur Miller and Michael Winrode of the Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee here on Circle A Radio at KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
Can you talk about other ways that people who may not be able to make it to the march can be part of that campaign for clemency? What can other folks do?
Well, we have a website that you can go to. whoisleonardpeltier.org. It tells you all the information that you need. If you have a computer and you need to, and you want to check things out and you want to get involved, you're more than welcome to.
And I saw something about a zap.
Yeah, a phone zap is when everybody calls a place at the same time, around the same time. The week after the march, we are calling for a Northwest phone and email zap. We want to make sure that the White House knows that the Northwest supports clemency for Leonard Peltier. You can go on to that website and get the phone numbers and addresses for the White House. We're asking everybody to call and email the White House as much as they can for that week. Later on, yes, continue calling and emailing the White House, sending them letters. This will continue for as long as it takes. We are committed to never stop this campaign. Sometimes it gets hard. It got really hard after Clinton, but we will not surrender or ever give up on Leonard. Now, it's possible that it's not clemency that he actually gets. It's possible that they decide to parole him instead, because that might be a little bit more politically easy. But by applying government to act, and the government controls the parole commission. All they got to do is tell them it's time to parole Leonard, and Leonard is out of there. So we got to keep this pressure up, and it's got to be sent to the politicians, to the president, and it also has to be out in public. The direction that some of us have taken from Steve Robert, who's Leonard's cousin and one of the co-founders of the Defense Committee, he's passed away since, is that Leonard has to become a household name, then they will free him. Because the other side of the coin, they want to suppress him, but if Leonard's case becomes known too much, then that will jeopardize a lot of the stuff that they have been covering up for so many years. Once it gets too big, they'll want to free him. And he's had some significant support, like Nelson Mandela, Bishop Tutu, the Dalai Lama, whole lot of celebrities, Willie Nelson and whatnot, a lot of people supporting him. We just have to make it a public political issue that people will jump on and support. Because they're doing it not just for Leonard, they're doing it for themselves. They have to be willing to fight for the world that they want to live in and fight for the right of people to speak out against what is happening to the people, to the land and whatnot.
One of the things we've got to do, we can't just be going around here claiming to be American Indian Movement members and we're concerned about people and everything else. So we've got to really start doing stuff. You know, building community gardens, chopping wood, hauling water, whatever they need it done. I said, that's your responsibility. That's what a warrior's responsibility is. It's not just prancing around with a gun in their hand and thinking, showing everybody they're tough. I said, that is, in our society, that's not a warrior's role, right?
Can you describe the AIM Warrior Society?
What we decided to do back when, we had a lot of infighting amongst ourselves. And so we decided that we don't want to fight each other. And we don't believe that we should act that way. And, you know, it's inappropriate actions. So I went down and talked to the Grand Council about some years ago because I saw this thing coming up. That's something that I'm worried about. You know, because I love all the people that were in our group, you know, everybody. I couldn't understand why we always have to have separations, and it's just, it's not right, you know. But anyways, what we're doing is we're standing up saying it doesn't matter if we have a patch on your back or if your AIMS, anything. The idea is we're going to go out and take care of our people and do the things that we need to do as warriors anyway. And we don't really have to have a label on it, you know. But that was what we were told to do, was go ahead and have a different group. So that's what we did. And we're just starting to get out there, and we got other chapters in other states. I see it as a good thing, you know. And so the whole thing is, like I said all along, quit fighting each other. Let's work together. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what AIM Warrior Society is about. One of the things that we're going to be doing in March with the Warrior Society here is we're going to be working with Occupied. We're going to go over to Hanford Nuclear Plant, where they had previously had a nuclear plant, of course, but they were supposed to clean it up some years ago, and they still haven't done it. So we want to bring awareness. We're not going to put up with the government polluting us. And just polluting everybody, you know, so we all need to get together with that, too. Those are the important issues that are all part of the same issue, like what Arthur was saying. Hopefully we can get a bunch of groups, too, to help do that, but that's going to be in March. So I thought I'd bring that up and throw that in there, too. So
things like that are very important, because one of the things that we try to get out to people for them to understand is that, yes, we want people to support Leonard, but we cannot stop the other ongoing struggles to just work on Leonard. If we do, then the government wins. The purpose of repression is to repress struggles, and they have Leonard in prison to repress a struggle, and if we allow that tactic to work, the government and the corporations win. What we ask people is not to stop doing the other things that they're doing, but rather to include Leonard into them. Take Leonard to their groups. Take Leonard to the Occupy movement, as we have in the Northwest, and to every organization, union, church, or whatever, human rights groups or whatever, and explain why it is important to help free Leonard. But we want, definitely want, and Leonard definitely wants and definitely supports an ongoing struggle to better this land and the well-being of the people in it continuously. So doing something at Hanford is very important to all of us.
You've both been really active for many, many years. And where do you see inspiration? What are some of the struggles that you'd like to highlight that you see the youth really standing up in?
This is another thing that's one of my pet peeves. People got to wake up and see what's going on around here. The government, what they're doing now, they're still doing a genocide, only they're just so sneaky about it, people don't realize what's going on. See, what they're doing now is they're going out to our reservations and they're talking to our kids and they're saying, here, we're going to pay for your schooling. But what they really do is they take our children off the reservation, train them to go against everything that they were taught when they were kids, and go against their own traditions to come back to the reservation and give that government what they want. That's a sneaky way to do it, but that's still genocide, and that's what they're doing. So we have to wake up and go, hey, wait a minute. That's just another little sneaky issue that needs to be addressed. As far as the kids, last time I was in South Dakota, it was really bad over there. Big suicide rate. And when I was at Sundance, there was a big bunch of kids that hung out on the side over there. And like, you could tell that they have nothing, you know, there's nothing for them. And so what we need to do is be self-sufficient. Like here in the wintertime in South Dakota, it gets really bad, you know, and everybody's going to try to get together and get stuff to South Dakota. Let's quit taking stuff to South Dakota and let's start South Dakota to be self-sufficient on its own.
Yeah.
Our people can take care of themselves. So let's give them the opportunity to do that now. And that's what I'm trying to do with Grand Ronde right now, too. We're trying to come up with a way to provide permaculture to all the tribes so that you can be self-sufficient. You can raise your own meat, your own produce. Everything can be done right there in the reservation. And we don't need the government or anybody else to come in here and tell us anything. We're self-sufficient. And that's one of the things that we need to do, because ever since they came up with the idea that we can't take care of ourselves, our people became dependent on them. Oh, here, you got to have this check. And pretty soon you got used to it. Started out by giving it, oh, you're going to give blankets. We're going to give you cattle. We're going to give you this. And then they become dependent on it. They got to stand up and listen to our elders, you know, stand up and be the people that they're supposed to be. Follow those traditions, you know. Like I said, we need to teach our kids. That's what I see in our youth today. That's why it's important that we teach our children everything there is to know about our struggles, about Leonard Peltier. You go out and walk out any of these colleges. I've done it a few times just to see. I've just walked around and kind of just asked people, hey, do you know who Leonard Peltier is? No. Oh, okay. Well, you know, and then I'll start talking. And next thing you know, I got a whole crowd. But it's important that we talk to these people and tell them what's going on and who Leonard Peltier is, because they don't know. They don't know what any of those struggles are, because they're being suppressed by the government. So it's our job to get out there and open our voice up and say something. Because if you don't stand up today, what's going to happen tomorrow? That's the thing that's really a big concern.
Arthur, do you also have things that you'd like to say about other struggles or addressing the issue of youth?
Well, as far as the issue of youth with organization, what we always try to do is involve them, not just get them to show up, but get them to do things themselves for it. And we've been rather successful with that. For example, we have a core group that makes up our security team. That group came out of a TIOP youth group that was TIOPs Against Violence that was initially organized against gang violence. And out of that, they got involved in Leonard Peltier and started doing the security for events, and they got very good at that. We have also had things like youth runs when we did the border for 9 years. Later on, another group took it over, but when we were doing it, every year we would have a youth run. Those young people, mainly Lummies, but other young people, the amount of effort that they would put into it, it wasn't a competition. I remember one year there was this real young guy, I guess he was maybe 6 years old, real small and everything, but he was determined to run the whole distance. So some of the older teenagers hung back with him and ran with him just to, you know, be with him. They could have gone on and got to the end much, much sooner. So our whole thing has always been involvement. The person that, the PIOP member that is doing the welcoming, who's also a member of our chapter here, is a young person. The reason why we asked her was because she was young. We've had a lot of involvement with young PIOPs in the march itself and supporting the rally and getting information out. It is essential to us, because the youth is always our future. Sometimes in struggles, we get so involved in the struggle that we forget about those coming up behind us. But with Peltier, we don't do that. We also do a lot of speaking in schools and try to counter a lot of the miseducation that they're getting. For example, I speak in a lot of high schools and colleges, and one question that I always ask, just to show them that they're being miseducated, I ask them, how many of you know who Chief Fleshar is? And very few ever raise their hand. And those that do think that it's just a PLF school or some place named after him, but they don't know anything about him. Well, he's essential in Northwest history, not just the history of Native people, but flat-out Northwest history. But they're not being taught these things. They're just being taught, I guess you might say, the history of the 1%. Then we try to involve ourselves with young activists and other movements, like the Occupied movement and labor struggles and other things. And I've been noticing in going to the different activities of people like Occupied, or last spring, all the worker demonstrations that were happening up here in Washington, how many young people are there. And I noticed how many young people are coming out to our marches. The youth of America is starting to wake up, and it's important for us older folks. I'm a older folk, obviously, to educate them, but not try to restrain them by saying, only do what I say or something like that. But, you know, give them tools to work with and see where they go with it. And I've been amazed at a lot of things people have done. Yes, people make mistakes, but all struggles do. But I think the youth in this country and around the world are getting fed up with the way things are, and they don't like the future that is being given them. So we have to get out there and help them get involved, help them become aware, and try to deal with this so-called educational system that doesn't teach them their history. I mean, it's just simply amazed me. I would even go down to Evergreen State College, which is a liberal college in Olympia, and ask that question, how many of you know who Chief Fleshar is? And they wouldn't know who he was. And I would shake my head and say, aren't you people taught history in your college? But obviously, they're not. They're taught to assimilate into a system and find their place in it, and not to question anything, not to realize there have been struggles of other people. I don't like the idea of how the colleges and books take struggles and make them into individual historical events or something, if they deal with them at all. I look at it as a continuous journey. We take from the past that which we can learn from in our generation, we add to it, and we pass it on to the future, and that's a continuous journey as far as I'm concerned. And that's why what Michael is doing on the reservations, teaching the kids to learn from the elders and tradition stuff, is so important, because that's the journey.
Yeah, he's got the exact point. When you go to a rally, bring your family.
Yeah.
Don't leave your wife and kids at home. Take them with you. If you got kids and you're a single female and you have kids, bring them with you. We're going to take care of them when they get there, so don't worry about things. Go up and have a good time, you know? And they're going to learn something while they're there. So don't leave them at home. Take them with you. That's important, you know? We got to have them kids out there, too. They're going to be our mouths in the future.
To give you an example of how well that can work, my son grew up in Leonard Peltier rallies and meetings. I first pushed him in a stroller until, you know, he's grown up and has kids of his own now. But at one point, I took him to a Peltier march. He was about 8 years old, and this reporter went up to interview him, thinking he was the one person there that didn't know what was going on or why he was there. So she asked him about Leonard Peltier. I didn't realize that he had paid as much attention as he did. And he ran down this line on Leonard and the rallies and stuff, and her mouth just dropped in shock. That's because we bring them, we involve them, and they do learn. They do pick up on it. He just blew her away. She couldn't believe what she was hearing.
The only thing I'm guilty of is struggling for my people.
Well, I would end by saying that we do these things not as charity, but as solidarity. Solidarity among struggling people. And it is essential, in my view, that we make solidarity into a way of life. Anybody that's in need and asks for it, we're there for them. When we start living like that, that in itself is changing society and making it into a different society, a society based on the well-being of all, because that's what we're struggling. We stand with each other. We forget our differences when times come along where we need to be there for each other in solidarity as a way of life. So with that, I thank you all.
Thing to remember is when you start something, start with the spirit, you know. Smudge yourself down, say some prayers. Get in touch with the Creator first. You know, tell him what your intentions are and he'll help you. Every time I've done this in Tacoma there, I've set an altar up in front there. And we loaded the pipe and had it sitting there. And that represents all them brothers and sisters that are locked up, you know. And for all those that are struggling out there. Not just for the people locked up, but everybody that struggles. When I'm doing that and I can hear the marchers coming in, I remember back in 2005, we did that, and when the drummers came in, you heard the hand drums, and it was like thunder. It was just ringing into the top of the buildings, and that's something that you'll never, ever forget. So that's something that you can give your children, you know, and start them off in the right way by remembering that spirit and teaching them to go to that spirit before you start something. And then every time it's going to work out good for you. Aho, ni taku yasa.
You've been listening to Circle A Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. A special thank you to our guests, Arthur Miller and Michael Oneroad of the Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee.
The Regional March in Solidarity with Leonard Peltier will take place in Tacoma, Washington, this Saturday, February 4th. If you need a ride, or if you have a car and you can offer a ride, gather across the street from KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, at 9 a.m. to leave for the march and rally. Please get in touch with the Oregon Jericho Movement if you will be joining the Portland Caravan or for more information. By email, oregon.jericho@gmail.com or call 503-750-0523.
You can hear this show and other archived audio at kboo.fm/CircleA Radio. Circle A Radio is on each first and third Wednesday of the month from 6 until 7 p.m. Thanks for listening.